Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 171 for comics originally released on November 17th, 2010. Now, starting us off in DC is Batman Inc. number 1. Now, they had a ton of Batman stuff coming out this week. We also had Batman 704, which I have not read, and Batman The Return, number 1, which I read before this. And there's also Batman Streets of Gotham, in case you haven't gotten enough Batman stuff this week. This is just a little ridiculous with the order they're kind of releasing some stuff in.
And, you know, some of the Batman books have this little Batman Incorporated logo on them. I'm surprised that Batman The Return didn't have a little Batman Incorporated logo on it, because that's, I read Batman The Return after I read Batman Incorporated, which isn't the order I would recommend anybody else would read them in if you're going to read both of them, since he kind of comes up with the premise and briefs people on Batman Incorporated in Batman The Return. And when you actually read Batman Incorporated, they don't give you any of that. It's just like, well, you should know.
I thought that other thing, the Batman The Return, was really poorly named. I had thought, Batman The Return, this is the return of Batman.
And he's already returned. He's standing there. You know?
Well, I know, but I thought it would play in between the search for Bruce Wayne, the Road Home stuff, and kind of fit into all that. And really, what it was Batman The Incorporation. Because, like you said, it's when they're building this Batman Incorporated concept, when they're really pitching that, and I think the way they named these things in particular, both that book, the miniseries, the Road Home stuff, was poorly chosen, at least for how it wound up being.
Well, I guess my point is like, there was no returning happening in Batman The Return.
Agreed.
At all. You know, he was back, And to me, I'm kind of going off the reservation on reviewing Batman Incorporated, but this whole scene in the Batcave, that should have happened in Batman Incorporated number 1, in my opinion.
Well, arguably, the entire aspect of what was in the return should have been either Batman Incorporated number 1 or perhaps a zero issue for it.
I would say that Batman The Return, since it's a one-shot, is essentially Batman Incorporated zero. Anyone who's planning to go out and read Batman Incorporated should try to get their hands on Batman The Return and read that first.
And again, that goes to my whole point of it was the naming of these things was poorly chosen. It should have been much clearer as to what the hell the order was and what was going on.
I would have to agree with you.
Now, as far as this particular issue of Batman Inc. number 1 goes, mixed feelings on it myself. I mean, Morrison is very hit or miss for me. This was more hit than miss, and frankly not as bad as I was afraid it might have been, because I felt that last issue of the Bruce Wayne miniseries, you know, when he's going through time and all that stuff, that's what I think we've come to refer to as bad Grant Morrison, where it's just a bit too far out there.
Mm-hmm.
This was, I thought, very straightforward, very, you know, enjoyable, a very good read. But it also comes down to, like we've just been talking about, the Batman Incorporated stuff is mentioned in passing here, but this first issue really should have explained the concept, sold the concept, and, you know, covered that ground. Now, it didn't. That's fine. What they did here I thought was good, and I'm kind of okay with the whole McBatman concept of franchising it out, you know, like a McDonald's chain or whatever. Not totally sold on it, but it's like, all right, let's see where they go with this. And in this issue, they went somewhere kind of interesting. I really like the way they used Catwoman here, kind of brought her back into the fold, as they've done in some other stuff recently. But really, you know, here, she's an equal partner with Batman in many respects. And I thought that was good. I like seeing some international action here and getting out of just Gotham and seeing Bruce Wayne and Batman kind of all over the globe. Now, here, they're mainly in Japan. But again, it expands the arena he's operating in, and I'm excited about that. That seems like fun.
Right. And, you know, to me, I thought it was an okay issue. Expectation-wise, it didn't really do it for me, because I personally am thinking, okay, I like the idea, you know, the buzz. You know, okay, Batman's going to franchise. And again, I got all of this out of The Return, pretty much none of it out of this number one issue. You know, that, oh, we need to have more Batmans. I'm going to have Batmans all around the world. I'm going to go and, you know, recruit and spin up these Batmans. To me, number one issue of Batman Incorporated should, A, have that premise building stuff in it, and B, he should actually recruit some Batman and not have it just be the story that we got. I mean, the story that we got was an okay story, and I agree with you. I like the way the Catman was in it. But as a first issue of Batman Incorporated, I thought it was poor.
I would agree with that. And going on that for a minute, the thing I'm unclear on is if this title is going to be about Bruce recruiting more Batmen, or is it eventually going to be about the adventures of those other Batmen? And to me, that's a key distinction, and obviously they can flip back and forth on that. But they failed in this issue to really clarify who is the star of this book. Is it Bruce? Is it the Batman Incorporated entity in total? Or is it the Incorporated Batman? And the other thing that I'm still not clear on, certainly not from here and not even from The Return, is I get why he... Intuitively, I understand why he needs more kind of warm bodies in you know, superhero suits, going out and protecting the population and doing fighting the good fight, all that stuff. I'm cool with that. And I'll just kind of go with that. It just seems like the sort of thing he would eventually do. But what I don't understand, why put them in Batman suits? Why effectively water down the brand? Why not just have them be, you know, create some new costumed identity? You know, kind of like the Checkmate Knights or something like that.
I can see the point of having them in Batman suits, in that, you know, it's like no matter where you go, some Batman is jumping out of the shadows at you. And, you know, as long as he recruits people who are good, you know, to do that, you know, it's like, man, I can't go anywhere without having Batman breathing down my neck. Now, the thing that would make that a little dicey would be if you start seeing 20 Batmans all standing in a room together or something. They go, hey, wait a minute. You know, but if you kind of keep it under the table, I could see there being a certain effectiveness to these Batmen coming at people from all over the world.
I guess it comes down to the quality. Can they keep up the quality of the franchise or not? All it takes is for one of these guys to get killed, and suddenly, you know, Batman's not got this immortal, unbeatable aspect to him, and that, you know, part of the mythos that they've built up, that Bruce has built up over time, is shot, literally.
True. As we see, you know, with this this guy in that he was planning on recruiting here in the second issue, who ends up in the first issue rather, who ends up dead before he even recruits him. So,
I mean, if this had been some kind of you know, these are the agents of the Bat, you can't, you know, escape his reach, because his foot soldiers are out there, that would have done almost the same thing. So I'm unclear kind of the thought behind some of this, the rationale behind some of it. And again, we got a good story here, but I mean, like you said, there's stuff that should have been in this particular issue that simply wasn't. Again, some was covered in The Return, some has yet to be covered. For me, this was a high 3, low 4, right on that boundary point. I thought it was entertaining. It certainly has me interested in going forward with this series. And I mean that not just, oh, the next issue, but kind of the long haul. I think there's some potential here. But it's also got so much lack of clarity into long-term direction and stuff. And again, failed, like we've been talking about, to really sell the concept of the book in this issue, that I'm probably going to go with that high 3.
Yeah, I gave it a 3 also. And one thing is I really hope that when DC does the first Batman Incorporated trade, they stick Batman the Return in as the first thing in it.
I think they have to. I would be shocked if they did not.
They've done stupid things before.
Well, like having it be in Batman the Return versus, yeah, you know, in this issue. So
there you go.
Point taken.
So next up, we've got Spider-Girl number one, spinning out of Spider-Man, really, and has the Big Time logo on the front cover, which is the new Spider-Man. It's not really an event, but...
It's the tagline. It's the banner. The first page is kind of a recap page, but not the standard stuff. They actually have some art they lifted from other places, had some, you know, captions to piece it all together, and this, I don't think, is how they should do it every time, but I prefer this to the just paragraph of text and the credit stuff that we get in a lot of previously in books.
And I liked how they kind of gave a recap for people who are coming into this without the background, because it is a number one issue, and this is the kind of thing where you don't want to be left cold, you know, wondering, you know, who this person is, because she is an established character.
Yeah, and I thought this was a fair use of, she's had her own series before, they've done some other stuff, we're giving her own series now, so it's not like she's brand new, and acknowledging that back existence without referencing necessarily particular stories too much, and it was a good balance for that.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that kind of puzzled me is they clearly state that she's lost her powers. We get into her chasing down Screwball and going after that. She reiterates she's lost her powers. Yet she's doing all kinds of acrobatics and web swinging and stuff, and it's like she's not just a normal teenage girl. But she's got no power, so I'm a little puzzled there.
Well, you know, I think this is... They make some reference somewhere in there that she's... maybe even in the backup, but, you know, that she's, you know, in some kind of gymnastics classes and this kind of stuff. And realistically, this is the kind of stuff that you see, quote-unquote, normal people like, you know, Batman and Robin jumping around and swinging off of rooftops. Daredevil, who theoretically his superpower is he's got the radar senses and the enhanced, you know, smelling and hearing and this kind of stuff, but he's not physically superhuman, and he swings off of rooftops and jumps around. So I kind of give it as like, you know,
she's an average, normal comic book teenage girl.
You know, an average comic book person who's had some athletic training can suddenly be doing this really wild stuff that, you know, in the real world, someone wouldn't really be able to do. But there's a precedent for it.
That's fair. That's fair. It's going to be interesting to see how long she stays non-powered and how that all kind of plays out. Because I hadn't really, and maybe I'm just a bad reader, but I hadn't really gotten that from the backup feature in Captain America, where she's been hanging around with Nomad, or really in the Young Allies stuff. But, you know, it worked here. I didn't think they really violated it. But it's like, you know, if that's normal, that's not too bad.
I enjoyed the issue. I liked it. They had some nice setup. It's kind of interesting because the main story, it almost seemed like she's meeting Sue Storm for the first time, or at least from the way she's reacting. Although, obviously, she's not, because she's met her before, you know, as is established in the backup story.
Well, I thought they made really good use of the Invisible Woman as kind of a, you know, way to help get some exposition out there in a fairly natural way, to use the Invisible Woman as Sue Storm, not the Invisible Woman. I mean, she goes into action, we see the Fantastic Four a little at the end and stuff, but showing her as a person and showing her interacting with, you know, Spider-Girl as a person, I thought that was really kind of cool. It would be nice to see Spider-Girl show up in Hickman's Fantastic Four and get kind of more of this sort of a feel from that perspective.
Yeah, and I enjoyed the issue. I thought they did a good job. It's certainly a strong female lead character. It's played, you know, straight and not condescending in any way. I think it's a good, solid book. And I think that, you know, this is also a book that I think you could give to a younger girl. And, you know, like one of our listeners, Hassan, he's got two daughters. I'd be interested, you know, if he plopped this one down with them, what they would think of it.
Yeah, I think this is a good all-ages book, and I mean that in all the best of ways. I mean, they cover a lot of ground here, setting up Spider-Girl's kind of status quo. We get some good action, get some good character moments. The only thing that I'm like, really, that's where you're going to go, was what happens to her dad there at the end, putting him in jeopardy in the first issue. It's like, wow, that was fast. But I like how even as some of that's happening, we're getting some of the Fantastic Four fight scene in the background, and she's just straight on. It's like, let's go see what's happening with Dad and make sure he's okay. And that fit the character. And again, it was a nice, again, use of the Fantastic Four in the background. I'm really curious what's going to happen next issue with who they're fighting and stuff. And I thought the foreshadowing of who that was earlier on was actually really funny and didn't telegraph the, oh, that's who it's going to be at the end. So I thought that was well done.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll point out on the price point, this is a $3.99 issue. However, it's extra length, and subsequent issues of this have been solicited at the $2.99 price point. So on an ongoing basis, this is a $2.99 book.
Well, the backup feature they had in this was a couple of pages and really kind of answers some of the questions of how does her family know the Fantastic Four? How did all that happen? And, you know, it was a nice, short, more, I don't say kiddified kind of a thing, but it, you know, the art was a little rougher, I guess is the way to put it, particularly with the thing. But overall, it was a fun story, too, and it really complemented the lead story very well.
I think they were trying to, with the thing, go back to his, like, lumpy form when FF was more starting out.
Oh, totally, totally. But there are a few places where he's in the lumpy form, and a few places where he's in the lumpy form drawn poorly. I'm thinking mainly the top panel on the last page of that thing. But overall, again, I thought it was a very good package. To me, it's a very strong 4 out of 5. And I hope they can keep up this kind of quality, and I hope they get the sales to support the book.
I also gave it a 4 out of 5. Very good, highly recommended title, I think, for people to check out. This is the kind of mid-tier book that just good, well-written, fun type of book that a lot of people skip.
Yeah.
Okay, now we've got GG Studios. We've got a book called Ethan with a question mark. That is, this is a very interesting book, I thought. I can see where they're going with it. They don't beat you over the head with it. It might have been nice, I thought, in the maybe on the inside front cover to have just a little bit of setup of, you know, what world we're sitting in. You know, is this the supposed to be your 2150. I mean, it seems a little bit futuristic, but not too futuristic, you know, but just a little bit of a, you know, here's the world we're in kind of thing, which I think you'll be figuring out as you go along, but that I don't think would have detracted from the story and would have helped it a little bit.
I see where you're coming from. I personally didn't feel it needed that. I thought that, you know, as I'm going through, you know, reading it, it's like, okay, this is interesting. I'm trying to figure out where they're going. The art's really good, but really, by the time I finished, I'm thinking, okay, the art was good, the story was even better. This issue introduces us to Ethan and his really unique situation that we're learning about as he does, and it really effectively puts us into his position and makes for a very thought-provoking premise that I think just has tons and tons of story potential. I mean, they could go for literally hundreds and hundreds of issues with this and, you know, still have more things to explore. Now, granted, they could do it in 12 issues and really suck if they went in the wrong direction. But based on what I'm seeing here, I do not see that happening at all. I think they've got a very clear idea that they're trying to tell here, and it's very well executed. And it's also fundamentally different than everything else that I'm reading, and I find it to be a very intriguing premise and a very solid execution. Because, like you said, they're not beating us over the head with the stuff, but we're getting a very clear sense of what's happening. We get enough things in here to be putting together some pieces as to, okay, wait, this seems to be some of the rules based on what we know so far of what's happened, and it gives us enough food for thought to be, it's like, okay, what can this, you know, character of Ethan be expecting next? What should he be doing next? You know, that kind of stuff, and is a very tantalizing first issue. You know, so I was very impressed with this.
So I don't know how much we can say about this without spoiling it. It's like trying to tread a line here. I think that, you know,
let me put it this way. Ethan wakes up, doesn't quite know where he is, quickly realizes he's in a situation beyond his control and not one of his choosing or his liking. From there, it goes sufficiently downhill. He's got few options but to just kind of go with it. When he thinks it's kind of played out, he realizes it hasn't and proceeds to go even kind of further downhill from there. And by the end, it starts to get into a point where, not that he can take control of it, but he can actually start to be a little more proactive as he's starting to figure out, I don't say the rules of the game, because it's certainly not a game, but as to the parameters his life is now potentially operating under.
I mean, I'm going to go with this, because it's not a spoiler, because you find it out by page 4. And that is, his name's Ethan Babylon, and when he looks in a mirror on page 4, or whatever that reflective surface is, he doesn't see his own face. So let's put it that way. He's somehow in another body, but he's Ethan. And how did he get there? And, you know, what's going to happen? That's all part of the mystery. And it's very interesting how it plays art. And as you mentioned, the art I really like. It's very nice art style in it. I think the art style here meshes with the story quite nicely too.
I would almost say this is Quantum Leap as if it were done by the people who wrote Lost, because it's got a lot more okay, what's going on, more mystery to it aspect, and that's kind of a bad pitch line for the book, because it's got a lot more to it, and I think that does it a disservice. But again, you've got somebody who's looking in the mirror and not seeing himself, and it's like, okay, what can he do? I'm really looking forward to see where they go with this, how many twists and turns they can pull, because it seems like it's got a long-term potential that a lot of concepts, frankly, don't have.
I would say if you like sci-fi, because this seems to have a bit of a sci-fi, kind of the soft sci-fi, not like space opera sci-fi, but more like, kind of Blade Runner type of Earth-based sci-fi without the totally dystopian future. But if you like that kind of sci-fi and you like the concept of something like Quantum Leap, this is something to really check out. Now, I have started seeing reorders of GG Studios books hitting at least my local shop here. They sold out. We had talked previously about, did we talk about Route de Maison Rouge, or did we talk about, we talked about Mediterranean. And
mentioned the other one.
Yeah. So, they've got several books out, and the books that they have had out, since they're a new company, these are properties that have been published in Europe, I believe in Italy.
Yeah.
And they're being translated into English. So they're new to us, quite well done. But, they had been blowing off the shelves. But over the last couple of weeks, even though those first issues, had kind of disappeared as fast as they showed up, I'm seeing decent-sized stacks of reorders of the first issue showing back up in the shops. So, if the shop owner's not ordering the things, obviously you're not going to see them, but they are becoming a little more available for people to get their hands on. Ethan, I give it I'm going to give it a 5. I really enjoyed the first issue. I like the art and the story. They did a good setup to the mystery and, gave me enough story that it's got me solidly on the hook for wanting to read more of this. And, you ask your shop owner if you don't see it there and see if he can get a reorder of the book.
For me, this was a 5 out of 5, hands down. No question about that whatsoever. Again, they told something that was very thought-provoking, very cool, and very different than everything else I'm reading, and executed it very, very well. And, out of the gate, they went from, we know nothing about this world, to, I'm very curious, I'm hooked, I'm intrigued, I want to read more on this. They've sold me on the series, not just the next issue. To me, that's a great sign of success. And frankly, everything else I've read from GG Studio, I've been very impressed with. Now, we got a few other things this week from them that I have not had time to read. I think the second issue of number 1, and I'm trying to think if I've got something else. But anyways,
The Skeleton Story number 2 came out. The One number 2 came out. I think those are the number two, the second issues that came out this week, along with Ethan number one.
I mean, they're not coming out with tons and tons of stuff, but it's worth checking out. And if they're telling a story in a genre and an area you like, flip through the stuff at the store, pick up a copy, buy it, whatever. You know, check it out. It's worth the trouble to go find their material because they're doing a really good job. And it's new to us. It's, again, original over in Italy and stuff. But there have been some cases where I've read things that have been done in other parts of the world, brought over, translated, and come out. And it's kind of hard to explain, but there's almost a you know how like in the bad Hong Kong movies where the dubbing's a little off or something?
Mm-hmm.
I almost feel that way sometimes with the lettering and the word balloon placement and stuff. It's like, well, they had to change the size of the balloons to fit the English language, the words, the dialogue. They had to flip the art or whatever, and it's just a little off. I don't get that feeling at all. There's a unity between the original art and stuff and the translated text, dialogue, and captions that flow together seamlessly, and it's as if it was done originally for
well,
us
I
as
think
the audience.
A lot of credit there has to go to the translators, you know, who are actually doing this, because you know you can't just do a literal translation of something in a foreign language into English and have it flow like that. You have to translate and find similar idioms in some cases. You have to, you know, change the flow. You have to do a lot more than just sit there and, you know, with your Italian to English dictionary and change the words. And I think that's what you're really referencing there, is that, you know, when somebody just does do kind of a literal translation, it seems really clunky.
Well, it's right? Not just the translation, although that's a lot of it. It's also the production values, where they're not treating this just as a secondary market, a quick way to get a buck or two, but they're actually treating it as if it's, you know, treating it with the same care they presumably treated it, you know, in the Italian market when it was first done. You know, the placement of the dialogue balloons, all that level of production, the mechanics of the words as well as the choice of the words is top-notch. And well done. It doesn't feel like they've had to shoehorn stuff to get an English version.
Right. Yeah.
And again, to me, that's both the mechanics of the production quality as well as the expertise on the translation side.
It is worth noting that, you know, there is some moderate cursing, not like mid-level curse words, but we got like the, you know, some pretty strong cursing in here. So, you know, not for the kids, you know, I would say this is a 16 and up title.
I believe that, but as I was reading through it, I did not particularly take note of that, and that's something that frequently I will take note of. So, you know, it's certainly there a bit at the beginning.
Go to the third to the last page and read what the girl is saying.
Oh yes, she yeah. Like I said, it was there, but it wasn't.
It's done tastefully. It's in context, right?
It's
like you're seeing an R-rated movie or something, and it's like somebody's talking the way someone would talk. It didn't seem gratuitous or anything, but it is something that, you know, I wouldn't plunk it down to a 12-year-old and say, "Hey, here you go." You know,
and that's a fair point. I guess for me, it was one of those that I acknowledged it as I was reading it, but didn't really think anything of it because it didn't feel out of place. And it's not like you hear some comedians and they're going for the profanity for the cheap joke and the laugh because it's shocking, not because it's funny.
Right.
You know, and again, this is something that I was very impressed with this. And again, I think GG Studio is a publisher to be watching these days and watching closely.
I also appreciate the $2.99 price point.
Always nice to see that.
Okay, and then we've got one extra book that we wanted to formally go over. We had this as a choice a couple of weeks ago, but it apparently got released in waves by Diamond, so we didn't get it the same week that some shops got it, and that's Days Missing Kestis, number one, from Arkea. So we'll talk about that since we got that in this shipment now. I liked it. You know what was interesting to me is I didn't know what I was expecting with it. The fact that Kestis is female kind of, you know, caught me because I wasn't expecting that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was going to be a guy. I really enjoyed the story, though. You know, it's just, you know, if you've read Days Missing before, I think that you could actually read this without having read the previous material and kind of go with the flow on what's going on here, but, you know, go out and get the trade, Days Missing. It's well worth it, yeah.
And we talk about that hardcover in episode 136 of the Weekly Comics Spotlight. This is something that, you know, visually is you know, fun to look at. I mean, everything from the angle they've got in that first panel and kind of how we're looking at the room, and it's got kind of that weird, almost keyhole-shaped, you know, aspect to it, making for a good visual. This story being kind of the origin of sorts for Kestis and giving us a really good context for her relationship with the steward and kind of setting her story off, you know, essentially at the beginning, but in a very good way for us to understand her and to not feel like she's just being forced into the series or whatever. It felt very organic and very natural. And, you know, this was, you know, the kind of story where the steward is trying to steer events by influencing some key people. And, you know, for a story that was really kind of, you know, the purpose was to introduce Kestis, she's obviously a very key player here, but we get a lot on the steward, his interaction with the two factions that are fighting, how he's steering those, what he's doing there, as well as kind of the bigger picture, you know, at the setup of you know, days he's folded to kind of make not happen or kind of getting unfolded. You know, it worked on many levels here. It's, you know, it's a fun concept. It's well executed. You know, I believe with this one they're going to do the same thing they did in the previous one, where they're going to change up creators, new writers, new artists, and different issues. That was something that early on I was kind of worried about. How well is that going to work? How much is the quality going to vary? But it's been rock solid and top notch throughout, and this issue was no exception. They have a backup feature here where we're kind of getting the steward's origin, and you know, I would have liked to have gotten that all in one shot versus it being serialized out like it is, because we only get 2 pages here, but it's a pretty intriguing 2 pages, and it uses them well. It's like, okay, I want to read more. I mean, this sort of a thing here reminds me of kind of what was done in the early days of Valiant with Solar and some stuff like that. Well, they'll have just this micro chapter that they'll serialize out through a couple issues to build to a bigger thing. And, you know, I was very pleased with this issue. I thought it was really good stuff.
Yeah, these are, you know, a cool concept. Again, this is another one of these kind of sci-fi sort of stories that if you like the science fiction, there's actually some really cool takes on different kind of sci-fi stories going on out in different indie comics right now. And it's a good time to be looking for some of those if you're a science fiction fan.
Anyone who's a fan of Doctor Who should check this out. It's very different, but it's got enough similarities conceptually. Here's a guy trying to help humanity and you know, bouncing around through time, fixing things.
I really do like that whole concept of, you know, the steward going and finding a day, a specific day where something happened that was really, really bad for humankind, and then folding that day away so it just never happened. It's just a cool idea.
Yeah. Kind of a sniper approach to time travel, almost.
Yeah. So I read a couple of other things.
What was your rating?
Oh, sorry. I gave it a 5. Okay. Again, I love this series. I think they did a great job. Phil Hester's a great writer. I've enjoyed a lot of stuff he's done. And the art was really nice by David Marquez also.
For me, it just missed the 5, just barely. Got a very strong 4 out of 5. And again, I strongly recommend this. It's worth checking out. So what else did you read?
So I had today off. So I read several. I didn't read that many things, actually. But I read more than, you know, just the books for this. I caught up on some older stuff, but I tried to read some of the number one issues. So I read RPM by 12 Gauge Comics. It was okay. It's kind of like an action movie kind of premise. Guy's a driver. He drives really fast. He seems to have the ability to, you know, calculate things in his head so he can, you know, kind of see as he's speeding up the street if some car's coming in, you know, from another angle. He knows if he's going to make it past it, given his speed and its speed and things like that. So there's a little bit of a thing like that, and he's a descendant of Paul Revere. It's kind of the premise there. If you like the kinds of movies like, you know, I would say like, you know, Too Fast, Too Furious, or whatever, some of those, the Fast and the Furious kind of movies with lots of car driving and stuff like that. Doesn't translate as well to the comic page, but there's a pretty decent story to go along with it. So that's from a new company, 12 Gauge Comics. Another science fiction one, George R.R. Martin's Doorways, coming out from IDW. I really like this one. This one, there's a little essay at the back from George R.R. Martin himself that he had been working on this to be a TV series, and it just kind of, you know, got into production and never actually happened. And this pitch was, he's an emergency room doctor, she's a feral slave girl fleeing her alien masters, and they travel to parallel worlds. So that's kind of the premise. But there was some actually pretty cool concepts here, nice setup, and some good action in this first issue. So I actually had only ordered the first issue, so now I'm going to be kind of backtracking and adding the subsequent issues of this series onto my pull list because I like this series. Read the Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps that came out. Read the Hellboy one-shot double feature of Evil, written by Mike Mignola with art by Richard Corbin. That was a pretty cool story. If you like Hellboy, if you like Richard Corbin, this will be right up your alley. It was a nicely done one-shot. And I think that was it for the new stuff.
For me, I read Batman the Return, Brightest Day, which also had Batman, this time as a White Lantern. So he's been a white one, a yellow one, a green one, and he's been all over. But also Flash number 6, all of which were enjoyable. I'm still loving what's going on with the Flash. Looking forward to the next story arc with Hot Pursuit, who gets a cameo at the end of this. I have still about a dozen or so things from last week that I haven't read, and I just got a ton of stuff this week. I had a total of 58 items, and five of them were trade paperbacks or hardcovers, but all the rest were comics and stuff. So it's going to take me a little while to get through this. Fortunately, I've got a long weekend in which to do that. So hopefully at the end of which I'll be current on both last week and this week.
Very good.
So anything else that do it?
Does it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Teen Titans number 89 from DC, Captain America number 612 from Marvel, and Stan Lee's Traveler number 1 from Boom Studios.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.